It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex has the day off. Andy and Renee are here. As we started the show, sad news, a farewell to the iPod. We'll look back at 20 years of great music. That and a whole lot more coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 817, recorded Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. You can't touch this. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Blue Land. Stop wasting water and throwing out more plastic. Get Blue Land's revolutionary refill cleaning system instead. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order when you go to blueland.com/MacBreak. And by Ultimate Ears Fits. Ultimate Ears Fits are the world's most comfortable earbuds with premium sound and all-day comfort. Use promo code MacBreak at ue.com/fits to get your pair. And by the new and recently updated TriCaster 2 Elite by Neutek, the most complete live production system on the planet. There's a TriCaster for every production, including yours. Visit go.neutek.com/twit-tv, where an interactive guide will advise you on which TriCaster is right for you. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Alex Lindsay has the day off. Renee Ritchie is here. YouTube.com/Renee Ritchie. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Leo. I'm clutching all my Apple gear just to make sure nothing gets canceled during the show. I'm keeping it all very close to me.
Hold it tight. Now that I like that hoodie you're wearing.
That's a Marques Brownlee hoodie.
Is that a Marques Brownlee? Man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He's Matt doing
Black,
well.
All the things.
I wonder if he'll sell the tuxedo
he's pretty
he
good.
Wore.
Met Gala, right?
Yeah, I wonder if he'll sell the tuxedo he wore at the Met Gala. Wow.
Yep.
Nice. Also with us, Andy Inaka. Let's see who he's plugging today. Good man, the CU Boulder Buffs.
Hello. Now, Renee, does this mean that, like, there's, like, a YouTube cinematic universe? Like, you and Marques are, like, just, like,
so.
one mega event away from, like, being in the same?
It's definitely
Met Gala.
It's definitely a world unto itself, really. These days. I mean, the YouTube stars are kind of in their own, they are in their own universe. It's very interesting.
I can't give names, but I've heard of a couple of really big events recently where they had, like, you know, like people at the top of Hollywood, the top of the tech industry, and then the top YouTubers, like, all just in the same room at the same time. They've done that. Yeah. Even the Met Gala was like that.
But I have to say, crossover is not easy for some reason. Just ask Annoying Orange.
Yeah, no, it's true. And for a while, YouTube had a fetish with the traditional stars. They would, all the top studio, like,
and
friends
they
with the late night.
Couldn't make it.
With the Jimmys.
Yep. I mean, I guess John Krasinski sort of did with his during COVID. But I really feel like it's its own universe with its own stars. Anyway, I don't know. That's just a philosophical.
You're right. But with YouTube, you never get a day off.
It's, oh, it's
like all the people who do well are like, no, we're not skipping this week. We're not skipping today. We're putting out something.
Well, and
that was my life at iMore, so nothing changed.
It's sort of the same for TikTok. Like, my son's trying to cross over into YouTube, as I have urged him to do for some time.
Yeah, way better monetization.
Maybe yes, maybe no. TikTok, some people are making money. He visited, I don't know who it was, a TikToker's $7 million house over the weekend and his garage full of cars. So somebody's making money. But yeah, Salt Hank.
They're just TikTok's not sharing the money.
They're not sharing it. Well, they shared it with this guy. I have to ask Salt Hank who it was. But he's only got 20,000 YouTube subscribers. So he's got a little ways to go. That's good, right? It's not zero.
Yeah.
He's only got a few videos so far. He's working on it.
That's awesome.
It's hard, though. It's hard, I think, to cross over. I think each is its own thing. Instagram and TikTok, not so hard.
And also, frankly, you know, those seven cars, I'm not sure that I'd want to have a job that required that much driving. You know? I mean, having to drive from house to house, building to building, I mean, that's just...
I did.
What kind of life is that?
I did tell Hank that if he makes a lot of money, please do not invest it in cars.
Yeah.
Generally a bad investment.
Show, Leo?
On the other hand, if you were to invest your money into some mint-in-the-box iPod touches right now, you might be you might be pretty loaded. You might don't really? Touch those, Renee. Don't even open them. Don't unseal them. How many do you have?
I got two mint in the box iPod touches here. For some reason, I don't know why I never opened them. And then I've got like the opened versions. I have the open gold version too, but it's out of reach.
Wow. The man is flush.
Very duplicative.
But this is the last iPod, and it is now official that after 21 years, it's the end of the line for iPod. Apple announced today that the iPod Touch will be available while supplies last.
But the music lives on, Leo. The music lives on.
Oh, I guess
stop the music.
I guess they must have a few in the warehouse.
Yeah, that's such good marketing. It's like no, we're not end of lifing and discontinuing a product that we're having. That most people wondered why was surprised we're still on the price list anyway. This is a limited edition opportunity to be in on the end of a term of legend.
They should have made NFTs at least.
Well, people are fighting for home, like for the original HomePods now. Like they're harder and harder to get.
Yeah.
And people are like, just give them to us. They're fighting over them like they're Tickle Me Elmo dolls or something.
So music is always. This is Greg Joswiak. Oz, now a senior vice president of worldwide marketing. He took Schiller's role. Music has always been part of our core at Apple, bringing it to hundreds of millions of users in the way iPod did, impacted more than just the music industry. This is actually sounds like hyperbole, but I think it's fair. It also redefined how music is discovered, listened to, and shared. Today, the spirit of iPod lives on. I don't know if that's true. We've integrated an incredible music experience across all of our products, from iPhone to the Apple Watch to HomePod Mini and across Mac, iPad, Apple TV. So, bye-bye. It was introduced October 23rd, 2001. I vividly remember that day. It went through a lot of iterations. The shuffle. Remember the shuffle? Remember the chewing gum?
The buttonless shuffle.
The buttonless shuffle. The iPod Touch was the last version.
The wide nano.
Yeah. Remember this one? The little clip-on for sports?
That was a very cool design.
Yeah. What killed the iPod Touch? Was it just a...
became a feature.
It's a feature. Yeah. iPod Touch
product of feature.
Was 200... How much? $279? What was it?
I don't remember what it got down to. It got down really low at a certain...
Did it? Okay.
Because it's basically an iPhone 5. Like, that thing is... ancient at this point.
Yeah. But it was a good choice for kids that you didn't want to buy them an iPhone, but you wanted to give them something.
Yeah, but it just became, like Renee said, just a real technological relic. And even the standalone iPods, they for a long time, they had a really important niche, meaning that there are people who are out running, there are people who are exercising, who don't want like a $1,000 phone or $500 phone falling out of their pocket. To say nothing of all that weight, but this beautiful little clip design that would have either a really cheap iPod that could play all that digital rights managed iTunes content that they'd purchased, or even this postage stamp thing with a screen and a user interface that could have like Nike fitness apps on it. That was a hell of an object. It was a real moment for Apple design because this is I'm really intrigued by what Apple's design people can do when they're not constrained by form factors that are kind of dictated by conventions, where you can say, nope, all we really need is a play and a pause button. Above that, go nuts. But then, of course, the solution to the, hey, I'm exercising and I want to be able to listen to music became Apple Watch plus AirPods. And so even that was aced out of the market. They couldn't compete with all the super, super cheap stuff that was out there for people who actually wanted something that if it fell off their t-shirt while they're running, get a $20 thing from AliExpress or from no name Amazon because you won't care about it. Otherwise, you don't want to lose your Apple Watch.
Yeah, right now they're selling the 32 gig iPod Touch for $200.
Yeah,
$300 for 128 gigs, $400. No wonder they're killing this product for 256 gigs. And you probably, you have an iPhone that's got at least 32 gigs free floating around. I can't see even buying a 32 gig version of this for a kid. The kid would be insulted. The
developer camp was probably the last thing they used them for, was to buy 30 for a developer camp or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the camera. You want to talk about living in shame, posting to Instagram with a 2000 with a iPhone 5 level camera on it.
Yeah.
You gotta wonder why. The thing is, I always try to measure my complaints about things because you never know. It'd be easy to say, oh gosh, I can't believe they still sell that. But there's probably a really, really esoteric reason why they were selling it. That there was some market somewhere that insisted that, hey, we need something to run iOS apps, but it can't be a phone. It can't have a cellular radio in it. And they kept it on the market because
the Pentagon.
Apple actually will sell like a government an actual iPhone with actual iPhone branding on it that simply has all the a flat plane on the back of it instead of a cover with the iPhones on it. So again, I keep and given how much it costs to do tooling on any new product, I wonder who it was who was buying just enough of these, or what contract they had that required that, hey, if you're going to operate in this market, you must also offer amongst your product line a product that does this, that said, you know what, it is just paying the fines would cost more than just keeping this one little tiny product on the assembly line.
They overordered and took them 2 years to clean them out.
Well, it's kind of, in a way it's sad. I mean, the iPod really was a transformational object when it came out in 2001. There were other MP3 players, but they were big, they were clunky, they were unusable.
What was that thing, Nomad? That was the famous Slashdot response to the iPod.
Oh, yeah.
The iPod was, it's not a Nomad lame.
Yeah. I had a Diamond Rio that was close to an iPod. If you want to listen to the car, you had to have, you know, a head unit with a trunk full of hard drives in the back.
Yeah. No, but that's a long and wonderful fight. The RIAA tried to have the Diamond Rio actually banned for sale, rendered illegal, saying that because it was a playback device for digital content, and because the only way you could possibly get digital content was downloading it illegally, because God knows the technology for converting a CD to an MP3 did not exist. Of course it did. They said, no, it's only a device for piracy. And they got damn close to getting an injunction to getting that thing banned. And that was even this tiny little ropey, what was it, a six? It didn't even hold like a full CD's worth of content. And that's at like ancient, like sticks and animal skins strapped together level of MP3 of music compression.
Actually, I used it for audiobooks because it could play Audible books. Yeah. That was the main reason I had Diamond Rio. All of that superseded by the iPod. And it didn't. How long do you remember how long it took for the iPod to take off? It feels like to me it was an instant. It was an overnight.
It was Windows, right?
Because it didn't support Windows at first, did it? No.
And so, as I recall, it was a big hit with nerds, but a $500 music player competing with what was then 200. The big deal was the hard drive, because it was the first really effective hard drive based player. The people who were really digital music hadn't really taken off. The RAA had a point in that where most people were getting digital music back then wasn't by ripping CDs. It was by going through LimeWire or Napster or someplace else. But it was a slow takeoff. But once it took off, once people discovered digital music, once the tools for creating your own music files from CDs took off, that's when things really, really hit.
And I imagine
once you have Windows, you needed the Windows version in order to. You can't make a lot of money by selling to just 8 to 9% of the entire world desktop market. You have to, if you want a lot of the money is in the pockets of Windows people.
And it was so begrudging; like he so didn't want it, and they had to convince him to do it. And he's like, "Fine, if you do it, it's on you. If it doesn't take off, it's your fault." And then he came out with that double cable. He's like, "The Windows machine, the USB is not powerful enough to actually even charge it. Right. So you got to put two cables on the back of your Windows one, and we want to add a tax to the Mac users, so we're going to charge that cable separately." It was just, the whole thing was like, you could always tell when Steve was slightly angry about a product.
Tony Fadell, whose book just came out, actually good timing on the book, Tony. He was the original designer hired by John Rubinstein, formerly from General Magic and Philips. He had done the Philips Velo PDA, the Nino PDA. Rubinstein had discovered a Toshiba little tiny quarter-sized Toshiba hard drive while meeting with an Apple supplier in Japan, bought the rights for it. And then the question was, now what do we do? Fadell hired in 2001 as an independent contractor to work on the project, then codenamed, I'm reading from Wikipedia, P68. He hired engineers from his startup, Fuse, veteran engineers from General Magic and Philips. They had to do it in about 8 months.
Yeah.
Didn't have a lot of time.
they bought so much stuff off the shelf. Even the OS, even the software was off the shelf that they Pico. Modified for their own uses.
The aesthetic inspired by the 1958 Brown T3 transistor radio designed by the legendary Dieter Rams. The wheelbase user interface prompted by Bang & Olufsen's Baocom 6000 telephone. Pixo, another company, designed the user interface. Did a good job, right? But it wasn't designed inside Apple. Although Steve, I think, had a lot to say about it. He's said to have dropped a prototype into an aquarium in front of engineers to demonstrate from bubbles leaving its housing that there is internal space to be saved.
That's so savage.
Also, that's
Steve.
The other story I remember from that from the development was that, like, again, this is they had a deadline, and also Apple did not have infinite resources at that point. They had basically learned to start treading water at that point, recovering from the crisis that they were in, and Steve rejected one of these prototypes because it had a green display. What was typical at the time, a green backlit LCD display. He said, no, this has to look. No, there's nothing green on this device. It has to be white. And so they had to somehow source from absolutely out of nowhere a very, very rare, like, white backlit display for this. It's like, Steve, we don't have time for this. We are building a life raft. It doesn't matter, like, where we put the viewports for this. There aren't going to be any windows. We're trying to get off this island and survive.
A guy named Vinny Chico, or Chieco, freelance copywriter who had been hired as a contractor by Apple to figure out how to introduce this new thing to the public, gave it the name iPod. After Chico saw a prototype, he thought of the movie 2001 and the phrase, "Open the pod bay doors, Al." I had no idea that we call ourselves a podcast because of 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Why, Leo?
I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that. It's the EVA pods of the Discovery One spaceship, and of course, Hal never did open those doors. Wow!
And now that same legacy is reflected in Siri, because that's now Siri's catchphrase.
5 gigabyte hard drive. That was, of course, the tagline. 1,000
mechanical
songs
hard drive
in your pocket. A mechanical Toshiba hard drive.
1,000 songs in your pocket. They were really good at the messaging, though. The messaging was so simple. $1 a song, 1,000 songs in your pocket. The entire way through, it was the experience was so clean. And I think he was right. Like, to compete with the Napsters and all of the free downloads, you had to make it easy. That was the only way you were going to ever compete with them. And that got him a lot of buy-in, a lot of product traction.
Yeah.
We really do have him to thank for that, because we forget about how horrified a lot of these the companies were about digital music to begin with. Sony, you would think they created the Walkman. They created this product category. And their solution was because they were their own music distributors, they started putting copy protection on CDs that would install essentially malware on every single PC that this disc was inserted to make it really difficult to rip the CD. And they also created this, if you'd given them your money to own a Sony digital music player, the software that was required to install music on it would instantly take a look, grab all of your MP3s, convert them into a locked proprietary Sony format. And I'm talking about the stuff you already own, the stuff that you had already legally actually converted from CD, and made you sign it in and sign it out when you put it into the player. This is the strong arm, just like we have, the whole world has Steve Jobs to thank for the idea of phone carriers no longer ordering phone manufacturers. Here is the device that we want you to build for us. Here are the limitations we are going to put on you so that you don't stress our network. That was Steve Jobs talked them out of that. Steve Jobs had to talk, and Apple had to talk the music industry down from, look, people are either going to be getting your music illegally because you're not making it easy or even possible to get it digitally, or they're going to be buying it from you through the iTunes store. We have to make it easy. We have to make it simple. I understand that even the argument about copy protection wasn't a fighting point, but it was something that Apple didn't want but had to accede to, because otherwise they're not going to actually get there. Again, Apple gets so much credit for the stuff they did. But
yeah, they wore them down on copy protection. And for better or worse, Steve said, you got to be able to sell your songs individually. And a lot of, this is for better or for worse, because a lot of artists still bemoan the loss of the album as a kind of work of art, as a coherent whole. But really, as soon as the 99 cents...
I feel that way about chapters on YouTube.
Right. Yeah, chapters. Screw them. As soon as 99 cent songs came out...
Buy your book by chapters.
Right. People started buying individual songs. It was really the end of the album as a work of art, I think.
Which was good and bad, because some artists really put a lot of love and value and thought and preparedness into an album. And some were like, well, we need one or two hit
tracks. Some it was shovelware.
Then just fill it up.
Yeah. And that is as much responsible for the demise of the album as Steve Jobs, frankly, because a lot of albums were crap. I bought my sister back in 2006 the U2. Remember the U2 version?
Yeah.
It had a black back, a red front. It only had 30 gigs, U2. But it came. What did I say? YouTube?
YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube.
We're talking
YouTube.
About YouTube.
I'm talking about Bono. it came the with. I think. Did it come with the entire U2,
I think so.
I think it did.
I remember. I was at the event, so like I got great like fourth row pictures of like Bono and the Edge.
Yeah,
this was before people got mad about Apple preloading U2 content.
This was back in 2006 when people liked U2 still.
Right.
Actually, I like him again after Bono and Edge played the Edge played in the subway in Kyiv over the weekend. That was an iPod. I don't know how long it was available, but I think if you had an in-the-box U2 iPod, that might be worth something.
And those ads, they with the white headphones, like the all
they,
black.
That's the other thing. They made white headphones a signature.
Yeah.
Everybody else's headphones were black. You knew immediately somebody had an iPod. You're sitting on the subway, there's the white headphones. And of course, I don't know if they did that. Do you think they were smart enough to say that's going to be our signature, the white headphones? They did by the time those ads came out.
I think they were smart enough to lean into their, like, it seems like Steve was also very good at leaning in to constraints, like the things that he had to put up with. Like, I remember, like, with Snow Leopard, he's like, there's not enough new features. There's no way I'm going up on stage and embarrassing myself, but what if we said there's no new features? Okay, there's no new features.
Here's the iconic dancing iPod ads where you see those white headphones. In fact, it's the only color. It's all silhouettes, the dancers, and they're holding their white iPod and the white headphones. Yeah. It really became a signature trademark.
That's a creative era for their ads.
This is 2006 this came out.
Yeah. So. Or how about this for amazing, that the HP, they actually licensed it to HP, so there was an HP branded one.
Yeah, I remember that. That flopped, right?
Yeah. But still, it was a real iPod. It was what an
there aren't
odd
really
choice.
HP fanboys, out there.
Let me see if I can find the first iPod ad. I think this is it. Here, let me turn the sound on. Go ahead, John. I think this is the guy sitting at a classic white MacBook. He's got a bunch of CDs in front of
all
him.
Of us, Leo.
He's rocking out. He's dragging the what? Updating songs on what? An iPod, FireWire, baby, and now 1,000 songs in his pocket. That's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Very first iPod ad. And I hope the music industry forgives us the use of whatever song.
I'm blanking on his name, but there was that fashion icon they were talking about recently, who had like 1,000 iPods with like little labels on them with all his different music all the time loaded up for him.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I think my favorite iPod was this one, and John lent me this one. This is the iPod Classic, and this was the one with 160 gigs, which at the time was massive. Still a little hard drive in here. Yep. And I bought several. One, I got a pair that I could exchange with my mom. So I'd put stuff on it, send it to her. She'd send the old one back, and I'd put new stuff on it. I hope she still has those. John, you carry this. You use this in your car, right? This is your,
Yeah.
It was a great story about the Lord of the Rings last movie was so big it couldn't fit on anything except an iPod Classic.
160
they didn't have fiber to the studio. Yeah. So they put the Return of the King on this iPod and then they'd walk it to the fiber optic station every day. And a couple times they thought people were following them and they would just like hurry, run across.
Or put on some headphones and rock out. Yeah.
They were so big. Yeah.
it was a great value because it was, people forget how much this, it really lived up to the name iPod. Where at the time I really thought, geez, isn't that interesting where number one, they're not specifically labeling it a music player. Number two, there's nothing, even the fact that here is the play pause button, the most important thing on a music player, it was this tiny little gray silk screen on a white background on one of these little orbital buttons. They really eventually made it into a container for what have you, that if it was a hard drive, if you connected it to your system, so that, yeah, it was a great way to sort of put a, you needed a hard drive for work, but you wanted your boss to buy you like a really sophisticated music player iPod. But also it was a great demo of iSync, because it could then sync notes, it could sync calendar, contacts, stuff like that.
Eventually it had a tiny screen, but you could watch movies on, right? And
yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know if anybody did, but I remember putting TV shows on my iPod.
They kept making a big deal of when video came to iTunes, that, hey, look, here's the best, here's how to watch Shrek on a tiny little screen that's about even smaller than a phone screen.
Yeah.
But it looked great.
All of this changed in 2007 when the iPhone came out. Yeah. Or at least started.
It made
to
the
change.
iPod into a button. It was literally a button on the iPhone interface.
Yeah, they called it an iPod. And of course, Steve Jobs, famously, you know, a communicator.
It's an iPod. It's a phone. It's an iPod. It's an internet communication device.
Yeah, all three, right? And that really, I think, you know, if you look back to the beginning of the end, as long ago as that was, 15 years ago, it was, you know, the beginning of the end.
Well, I think that's what Tony said in his book. Like, they were working on these three projects. Like, they were working on the touchscreen project. They were working on the widescreen iPod project. And they were working on the phone sort of project. And then they realized it really was the same thing. It was an integrated device that was their biggest threat in the market.
Yeah. But that's where Apple's always excelled, the willingness to kind of eat their children and... Whoa! I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, cannibalism.
Oh, are you putting? You're putting. We're gonna have a little. We're gonna have a little background dancing.
For Renee, I don't have those Ritchie. Moves though. I don't have those moves.
You know, the other thing is those ads sold records. I mean, if you got on, if you were lucky enough to have a song on an iPod commercial, I remember the one with the 1, 2, 3, or later Apple commercials. Yep. They really sold records. That was a great.
I just
way.
Think of the same one.
Yeah.
I still have music, and whenever I go through the folder of my music library, that's just like, I call it orphan tracks, ones that don't belong, aren't part of like a whole album that I own. It's like, gee, where did that come from? Oh, that's right. It was an iPod ad, and I liked it so much that I had to have it. There's a song by Jet that was used that was like my jam for the entire year.
This was the first ad to say at the very end, Mac or PC. That was around, what was that, 2005? And then in 2006, see if you recognize the dancers in the upcoming ad, because I think this is when this is not the one I was thinking of. This is a great, here it is, great YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. This is a great day. YouTube, every Apple iPod ad ever, 2000.
The Coldplay one was terrific as well.
Was there a Coldplay iPod? Yeah. No,
yeah,
but they had
it was iTunes or iPod.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. Mm. Look at this. Wow.
I put a link to my there's a Flickr album online of my pictures from the U2 event. It was pretty cool.
Look at that.
I put that in the show notes if you want to use
it. As soon as Bono and The Edge stop performing for us silently. Again, thank you, music industry, for making it impossible to play any music, even if it's newsworthy, on our shows. Yeah. And artists, you can thank your labels for eliminating the chance to get any promotion at all from our show.
The other cool iPod thing, what Apple anniversary was it where they gave away really nice art posters of the Macintosh lady from the 1984 commercial, again the iconic frame when she's got the sledgehammer, she's running through the aisle with a Macintosh t-shirt in, but they digitally added in like iPods and iPod headphones and an iPod clip to her waist. that's on my wall in another room.
That's right.
The weird thing is right now, like, you can get a ton of music on TikTok, and I think YouTube Shorts is starting to do that as well. So obviously some benefit.
Well, they make deals.
Some very narrow use cases.
They make deals. Here was the iPod that you might have watched Shrek on. Get ready for this one. It's coming up here. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
That's it was a very weird fatty iPod because
it lasted a year.
It only lasted a year, really. Wow.
Yeah. That was when 9to5 Mac famously leaked and got into a whole brouhaha about that sort of, I think, made them famous at the same time.
Yeah. I really didn't want to watch videos on that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Again,
the whole thing was like sync everything onto this one thing.
Yeah.
And also it was kind of magical. When episode one of Star Wars, like obviously I had to like start waiting in line like outside the theater. I had my ticket. I'd already gotten in line 8-10 hours earlier 2 months ago to buy my tickets to the first showing first day, but I had to get in line like 10 hours earlier. I loaded up I think I had a Palm device, and I think I might have had – I'd have to check to see if it was an iPod thing. But I had the entire, like, original trilogy loaded up on these devices, just watching it on these tiny screens. And it was – it's hard for generations to understand what a weird and wonderful thing that was, where now we just stream whatever it is to whatever device we have. The idea of not only having it in a digital format to begin with instead of, like, on DVD or on some sort of physical media, but also this device in my pocket. I can just sit here. I think there were people who actually like brought a TV and a VCR to enjoy it and entertain the people in the lobby, but I'm like, screw that, it's just for me.
Tony,
that would have been a big deal.
Tony Fidel tweeted, anyone want to see what I unearthed when I cleaned out my garage and found photos of everything I've ever made in six full boxes, full Home Depot.
You've got it right on concrete. No. moisture.
Looks like he's got a few exercise items, too, that he no longer uses. Anyway, iPod, it's been a really great 20 years. Thank you.
Yeah.
We raise a glass to you, sir.
Yeah.
It's still the last acle for that the product lines, the product category still exists, but now it's in the form of these $1,000, $2,000 like high end audiophile like audio players that are the size of like a TV remote control from like 1988, but they got to tell you that this will unwrap the 320 kbits per second, like 96 bit wide path. Look at the alloy metal that we made all the interconnects inside the device of. We've got a totally isolated audio path between them. I mean, it's like, yeah, I think you've kind of lost the plot. I do have a Sony A55. Like digital Walkman, because I do like the idea of having my entire music library on one device, and I can't afford like a 1 terabyte phone, or at least as of 2 years ago I couldn't. So it's an interesting category, but it's nice that it's still there. There's still people out there. So the sad irony is that if you want an iPod Shuffle now, an iPod right now, you have to buy like a Sony device that runs Android, and it will.
Well, the iPod. It's funny because the iPod killed physical media, and it wasn't long before the iTunes Store became the number one place people bought music, not the record store. But now streaming music, and Spotify, gets credit for this because Apple came late to the game, has really replaced digital copies of music. So, Andy, you might have wanted a terabyte of music in your pocket, but nowadays with streaming,
you just ask for a song and it plays.
Yeah, you need a connection. Here's some of Andy's pictures. You did have good seats. What camera were you using?
That was an ancient Panasonic. Oh no, that was later. These I was shooting video and pictures. Some of the best pictures I got were from the video.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that was from a really really cheesy Kodak digital camera that I liked very much.
Kodak. Yeah. Wow. Here's Steve with the I could tell this is the Kodak. Wow, look 2000, how
2006 man.
Look how grainy that is. Yeah.
Actually, I bet with AI tools I could like increase clean the that resolution
up. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But you know what? That I'm looking at the original pictures. That was a small theater. I don't know where that was.
Yeah. I think it was the San Jose Theater.
Our O'Reilly O'Mac O'Conference Center, you list on here. It must have been San Jose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what a great time. There's that black and red beautiful U2 iPod. iPod socks were announced as well at that event.
I miss those.
That was a crazy product.
This is the only argument that I will tolerate. And the Apple has lost its soul since Steve Jobs passed away. Like, iPod sucks. It's such a ridiculous thing, but it was such a lovely thing. It was such an Apple thing.
Well, I guess. I don't. It's bizarre. It's just bizarre.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and obviously somebody convinced Steve. Yeah, Steve, that's what people really want. Socks for their iPod.
We need accessories. We need accessories. Maybe, come up with some accessories.
I remember, Macworld Expo some years later was basically the iPod accessory show, right?
Yeah.
Then it became the iPhone accessory show.
Then it was the iPhone accessory show. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. I went for a walk this morning with my Apple Watch and my AirPods. You know, that's it. I didn't have to have anything
else.
Didn't need anything else. The exact same vibe that the iPod used to give me. And I was super happy. Listening to Audible, just walking down the street.
Very portable. Yep. You're streaming it. You didn't even know it was there. Yeah. It is, according to Wikipedia, the longest run of any Apple product ever, 20 years in active production. I think the Mac has lasted longer, but I guess any... Well, no, the Mac
has lasted. It's the longest now currently dead product.
Maybe that's it. I think we're going to have to correct Wikipedia now that I think about it.
Citation needed.
Citation definitely needed. Renee, Richie, Andy, and Akko, I'm glad you could be with me for the saying goodbye.
We're here together at the end, Leo.
At the end. Look what I got
Every
here.
Great story needs an ending. That's only when you really understand
it. That's impact. Really true. It's not the story hasn't been told until it ends. And the full story comes out. So I think that's
also
true.
It's a classic case of the past is prelude. This is part of a ongoing story that began before the iPod and continues after the iPod.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Blue Land. I tell you, if you want our story in Planet Earth to continue, one of the things we got to do is stop the single-use plastics. We might also want to stop wasting water, too. Blue Land has been a revelation for our family. An estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away every year. And every single plastic bottle ever made is still sitting in that landfill. They don't break down. They stay there forever. And if that's not bad enough, all of those plastic bottles of cleaners and hand soap are 90% water. You're driving trucks around delivering water. That's a lose-lose for the planet and for your pocketbook. Stop wasting water. Stop throwing out plastic. Get Blue Land's revolutionary refill cleaning system instead. Blue Land was founded on the belief that a cleaner planet starts by eliminating plastic waste while creating powerful, effective cleaners for your entire home. Forget that notion you might have, oh, I can't have a good cleaner if I'm trying to save the planet. That's not true. Blue Land's idea is simple. You buy the bottle once. This is the forever bottle for the multi-surface cleaner. These are lightweight but hard plastic. But there's also for the hand soap, they are heavier because you have to pump them. And so those are nice solid glass. They're great. You buy this once and you refill it forever, which means no more plastic waste. The refills are just these little tablets. You fill this with hot water up to the line. You put the tablet in. It fizzes. It dissolves. Now you've got excellent cleaners, a multi-surface cleaner, a window cleaner. Hand soap, all smelling great. Iris agave, pearine lemon, lavender eucalyptus. I bought the Christmas package last Christmas. It was great. Every time I washed my hands, it smelled like gingerbread or peppermint. It was fantastic. These are great, beautiful, Instagrammable bottles. And they work really well. The only thing you'll have to throw out is your outdated idea that eco-friendly products cost more and work less. You can also get it for a kit, which is a great housewarming gift, I might add. I've already given it to my daughter as a housewarming gift. From their best-selling Clean Essentials kit to their hand soap duo and plastic-free laundry and dishwasher tablets, we use those too. In fact, I was putting clothes in the dryer. A rare moment for me. Lisa said, could you put the clothes in the dryer? I said, fine. She said, don't forget to put in the Blue Land wool balls. We got three of those. I said, do these really help? She said, yeah. Cuts static, dries faster, don't have to use dryer sheets. Love those. Love those. And you know what sells out every time? The Blue Land toilet tablet cleaner. These are so cool because you put them in, do the rest of your sinks and stuff, come back, brush out the toilet, you're done. They sell out so fast because they work so well. Blue Land's stunning high-quality forever bottles start at just $10 when you buy a kit. They're meant to be reused forever. The money-saving refill tablets start at just $2. Yes, you can get a replenishment subscription. I do, so I never run out. Actually, it's interesting. I think because of Blue Land, everybody's washing their hands more. I noticed the hand soap runs out, but I don't mind because I've got plenty of tablets. Just put another one in. That's interesting. I'm just thinking around the house. I think because it smells so good. Try Blue Land today. You'll love it, and the planet will thank you. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order when you go to blueland.com/MacBreak. 20% off the first order of any Blue Land products. blueland.com/MacBreak. blueland.com/MacBreak. Thank you, Blue Land, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. You support us when you use that address. So make sure you do blueland.com/MacBreak. You'll also get 20% off. Business Insider. Apple is planning to shake up its massive services business to push further into streaming and advertising. Eddie Q is getting the job of reorganizing the management structure. This is sources talking to Business Insider. Q is giving more responsibility to services VP Peter Stern and ads boss Todd Terese. $76 billion business. That's the App Store, that's Apple Music, that's iCloud, that's Apple Care, Apple Pay, Apple News, advertising, Apple TV Plus. It grew 17% in the last quarter, as we talked about last week. If it were a company by itself, it would be the 113th largest company on the Fortune 500 list by revenue.
Behind several other independent Apple companies.
Yeah, right. One person, this is again Business Insider, one person who has spoken directly to Q said the senior vice president of services is considering how to unleash growth by reorganizing the management structure and pushing harder into areas like streaming and advertising.
Yeah. Growth is the enemy of us all.
But Apple's soul, come on. Wouldn't you rather have them struggling? But
I really wish Apple was not in advertising. Like, I love the streaming stuff. I think Peter Stern is phenomenal. I think they're doing great, great services products. I think all of us depend on ads. And I have nothing against ads in particular, but I think with the positions that Apple has taken and the way that they've aligned their businesses, ads are just not compatible with that. And I fully understand Steve did iAds and he thought, you know, and there's people within Apple who believe that they can do ads right, but it's hard to be the company that, you know, does ad tracking transparency and then offers ads like in any way, shape or form. It just doesn't pass the Caesar's wife test with me. And I wish that wasn't I know there's so much money that could be made there. I just wish it wasn't a focus area.
Where are the ads right now? They're in the App Store and Apple News.
Apple,
right?
It's horrible. Apple News is like worse to read than some websites now because they have those giant ads in every third, every second paragraph. Yeah.
Also, I wish that Apple were a bit more transparent in where they're selling ads or where they're selling placement more than anything else. Like, I'm still kind of horrified that after so many years since the last time that the App Store was reorganized, there's still no way to say, look, don't sort this, don't preference this, don't give me any editor's choice, don't give me anything. Just I will sit here for – I have planned the entire next day and a half to look through every single listing in the utilities category. Just let me see everything you have without my having to do a search or anything like that. And you always feel as though it's the Netflix effect where are you showing me what you have or are you showing me what you've been hired to promote?
Yeah. So Todd Terese, who's a name you may not remember, was in fact the guy in charge of iAd, which launched in 2010, shut in 2016 because it never really got much of the mobile ad market. So he's getting another shot. He's back in the chair, according to a source who spoke to Apple, to a Business Insider. Services is going to benefit from, I think, considerably from sports, right? The Hollywood rumor is that the NFL Sunday Ticket deal is already done, just not announced yet. They want to buy NBA rights, which would be interesting. They already have Friday Night Baseball. This is Ed Dresser, president of a sports TV consultancy, Dresser Sports Media. The unique situation with Apple is it has a relatively small base for Apple TV Plus. The addition of Sunday Ticket would allow them to increase their base subscription level, a metric in the business known as Lyft. It's good for your Lyft.
Get cricket. Just sign up some cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
New subscribers, additional revenue for add-on sports package. advertising. That's another place advertising can go, right?
They should do a deal with Ryan Reynolds for that soccer club he bought with the guy from, oh, I'm blanking on his name, the guy from Mythic Quest.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I think Apple is the company to make soccer big in America.
Again, soccer and cricket, like these are two
untapped.
Exactly. There's you want to make a joke about, you know, ESPN 8, the Ocho, but get the sports that like have everything that American sports fans would want, to say nothing about the people who came here from countries where soccer and cricket are like the major sports. That's a huge market that they could be tapping into, and I can't imagine that. It's as competitive bidding for international cricket as it's going to be. For United States rights to international cricket. The fact that you can't even watch it anywhere except for whatever's being posted on YouTube. That's such a big opportunity. It could be a great signature for Apple.
That's a really good point. I hope they're listening to us today.
Yeah, women's sports. Women's sports.
Yeah.
Again, some of the greatest amount of time I spend watching sports are like women's collegiate softball that I kind of happened into through a Google recommendation, and now it's like, my God, this is like they're quick. They're not. It's college sports, so it's not MLB, so there isn't like 80 million ads, but also they get through it really quick. The level of play is
so
as high
good.
As any other
oh,
collegiate
it's
sport.
So good, yeah.
And again. And this is also a category that is just not being, for sexism, for whatever reason you want to mention, they are not being supported with lots of corporate dollars. If Apple were to say that we are going to be the home of WNBA,
wouldn't that be amazing?
Because we can snap that up for not much money, but also because this is a totally ignored area of sports that needs that will be boosted by the support of a channel like Apple TV Plus. Anyway, lots of things they could be doing with sports above the traditional. Hey, we're going to compete with Fox and CBS for MLB for football and for basketball.
I think they covered this maybe on Tech News Weekly, but Apple, Google, and Microsoft together on May 5th announced that they are going to expand support of the FIDO standard, FIDO, and the FIDO Alliance, which is a passwordless sign-in standard. I think everybody in, certainly Microsoft has been saying this for a long time.
Yeah.
Everybody agrees passwords have got to go.
Yeah.
And the FIDO Alliance seems to be the closest thing, except for Steve Gibson's squirrel, which unfortunately, I don't know, nobody seems to want to adopt. The expanded standards, this is from Apple's press release, the expanded standards-based capabilities will give websites and apps the ability to offer an end-to-end passwordless option. Users will sign in through the same action they take multiple times each day to unlock their devices. So fingerprint, face,
it's like a token, basically.
So once you're logged into your device, then you're automatically logged in. Is that it to the websites, or it just automatically says hello?
The authentication generates a token.
We know it's him because or her.
Essentially, the entity that wants to be authenticated doesn't do the authentication itself. It just simply asks the device you're using, hey, is this person who he claims to be? And that's it.
This seems right.
Because the fingerprint on my phone is way better than any password that I can remember. And if I want to have something, if I want to base my login on something even more secure than that, saying that here is a physical device that I have to have that will only work with between these 2 hours in this physical location, I could switch to that too. It is such a long overdue thing, and it solves a hard problem that no user likes, because you have to have strong passwords, but strong passwords are the enemy of security, because people are going to choose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 the eighth time that they have to reset their password.
I hope Steve Gibson covers this on Security Now today or at some time soon.
I don't want to be a pooper of the parties here, but like they do have to be careful with this. Like, for example, Google has a very good authentication system. They have a very bad re-authentication system. The difference, well, first, they shouldn't have both, but they do. They're both separate things, and they have separate feature sets. So, for example, if I go to log into my Gmail account, and it doesn't recognize me. It'll say, do you want to use Authenticator? Do you want to have an SMS if you have that set up? Do you want to have another device? Like, you want to get your Pixel phone or your iPhone? And that's all great. But for the re-auth, it'll just say, you need to find iPhone 5. And I have no idea what iPhone 5 is. I have no idea where it is. It might be in a different part of the world. Might be in a drawer. I might have sent it back to Apple. Do you want to use a different method? Sorry, you can't.
Well, in theory, and happened, like, so many FIDO times would solve traveling. This. And maybe that's, maybe I hope Google will go to this. According to the Apple press release, one of the things FIDO does is allow users to automatically access their credentials. Sometimes you use the word passkey on many devices, yeah, even new ones, without having to re-enroll every account. So you can, I guess, Apple or Google or Microsoft would act as a trusted third party. You could say, hey, Microsoft, new device, please authenticate this one, and then the authentication goes forwards. It also enables users to use FIDO authentication on their mobile device to sign into an app or website on a nearby device, regardless of, yeah, independent of OS or browser. So I have my iPhone. This is now becoming, and I think this makes a lot of sense. This is my authenticator. And I have my iPhone, and I put it near my PC, my Windows PC, and the PC says, I see it's you, Leo, because you've authenticated using Face ID. I would love to see that.
Challenge you for, like, a bank. The banks are doing that already. They're challenging you to authenticate on a device app.
Yeah.
It does also illustrate another possible thing that we need to watch out for, that if government services are a thing that is on the surface quite responsible and saying that, hey, look, we're not going to allow people to access your accounts, to access your information, unless we're going to demand this higher level of authentication, this higher level of security, which is good for most people. But now you can't have a system in which the state government for government benefits, for your SNAP benefits, they can't say, oh, well, we won't authenticate you unless you have a smartphone with these capabilities, because a lot of the people who require these services don't have these things.
Yeah, so there has to be a fallback.
It has to accommodate people who are not going to have the technology.
And I'd also be concerned that it's somewhat less secure because it's single factor. It's just biometrics. Yeah. So I would hope there would be a way to say, no, and I want a second factor in addition to the biometric.
It's sort of like one and a half, because you have to have the object as well. So you have to be, like, the thing that you are, your fingerprint, and the object that will recognize.
So it is still two factor, isn't it? You're right.
Yeah. Well, one and a half, I'm not going to go all the way to two.
Yeah. I can understand that these companies would like to make it easier. They understand the current system is horribly insecure because most users reuse passwords. They don't have good passwords. I mean, it's already so bad.
They forget them always.
That anything better is going to be more secure. But is it as secure as people like us who know what we're doing, who use two-factors, use a YubiKey, for instance, and Touch ID? And so can we make it as secure as we want it to be? Yes, it's better for most people. Yeah. But is it
going to add
be,
another factor? If
is
you
it going to be dumbing it down? Yeah.
My understanding of the standard is that it's agnostic, so that whatever, so that if I decide that no, I want to have this secure key plugged into a USB-C port plus this other form of authentication.
Good.
So long as that step has been achieved, the site at the other end doesn't care how it's been achieved. So if I do want to have a password like 123456789 and no authority is preventing me from doing that, I could also do that. But as soon as people say, oh, look, people who have a phone made in the past 5, 6, or 7 years, as soon as they say, well, just touch your fingerprint authenticate on this device, and now you're good for pretty much everywhere you go.
How do you solve this for people who don't have a phone? As you pointed out, Andy, this is problematic.
I think you have to stick to, like, old fashioned, like, really, really strong passwords. I don't know what the solution would be. This is a solution that if you have technology, you're golden. If you don't have technology, you kind of have to stick with the old stuff. But you have to make sure that there is always that other door. Just like every time there is a big initiative to saying, hey, from now on, all of your government benefits can be paid electronically into a bank account early. We're going to have a portal website so that you don't have to go to 8 different sites to manage. There's one desktop for everything. You always have to have that 800 number. You always have to have that phone line for people who just have access to a telephone and are lucky to have that. You have to account for people who don't have a fixed address or don't even have access to banking. It's because it's these 1-3%, sometimes 10% of the population that need these services the most and are going to be suffering the most if they get shut out.
I expect to hear something from Google tomorrow. We're going to be covering Google I/O keynote, 10 a.m. Yep. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Jeff Jarvis, Jason Howell, and I will be watching the keynote. So I expect Google's part of this alliance. I expect to hear them say something. I'm sure Apple will, as they did, by the way, last year at WWDC. I'm sure they will go further
their
into
team
this.
Is amazing. Like every week or so, you see a tweet go by with someone who just figured out that they could do automatic SMS code filling. And there's like, give a raise to whoever invented this. And I look over at the guy's account who invented this.
That is a nice feature. Isn't that a nice feature? I just love that. Yeah. And I hope that companies don't see this as a way to lock people into their devices or their phones. Or, you know, this really needs to be an industry-wide kind of initiative.
Well, it's everybody but Facebook so far, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Facebook and Twitter, where the hell are you?
There's Elon will have his own. Make money every time
Twitter's
someone logs into
problems
something.
Right now.
Yeah, he'll have Musk authenticate.
Although the market is fixing that right now.
Yeah.
Well, is it with Tesla stock or Twitter stock?
The stock is so far down, I don't know if I'll have enough money to buy Twitter anymore.
Ay. We almost
it's
had
weird
a
when
Musk
the 2020s create and the 2020s create and solve their own problems. It's
yeah.
just yes. so weird.
Yeah. Yeah, all in one massive stroke. Do you think WWDC will be the unveil of Apple's AR? You know,
I don't. No. I would love it to, but I think it's too early.
Yeah.
I think we'll see the Mac Pro. I just don't think we'll see the headset.
I think that's the only thing that I'd be willing to bet for sure is that this year there will be outside parties who have been seeded with hardware and dev kits so that they can dog food test their own system outside the company, but also so that at the time when they first show this thing, they can't just show, and here is a box, and now here is a clown sitting on top of them. They have to show something real, something that is even going to want developers to invest $2,000 or $3,000 in advanced hardware so that they can hopefully chase after the money that comes a year after the developer hardware comes out. That's the only thing I believe for sure.
Article in Protocol, Yanko Reckers writing, Apple is a massive force in AR. It's also been holding the technology back. That's not what Yanko's saying. That's what some are saying in AR, including immersive computing specialist Christopher Lepkowski, who says Apple's been a drag on innovation in web AR, primarily because they haven't put it in the iPhone. Web-based AR support is still lacking. Yanko says,
this is where we need Alex.
The company,
need
I know.
To channel Alex for this.
Well, yeah, but he also is so bullish on it that sometimes it's like, well, okay. 1,000 engineers working on AR glasses at Apple. Plans to release something, according to everyone, including Mark Gurman.
They have a huge office in Boulder, Colorado now.
This year, Boulder, interesting.
Yeah.
They have that framework. They have USDZ. Alex is always singing its praises.
His favorite.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it's interesting. Like if they were going to release the headset, like actually release it in September, I would expect developer announcement in June. Right. But if it's not going to come out until spring 2023, then I don't think we'll get the developer announcement until like September or October, the way they did with the Apple Watch.
Lepkowski's complaint is that AR works on the iPhone, but you have to download an app for it. You have to get the IKEA app or the something app. He says every click you make consumers go through, you lose 50% of your audience. He wants WebXR. He wants that standard, which was developed by Google, Meta, Samsung, Mozilla, and Magic Leap, but is yet to be supported on iPhone.
Mm. Yeah, they support it. They just don't support the same framework that everyone else is using, which makes it effective. Like you can go to apple.com, press a button, the UDZ file opens up, and you can run around with it.
Yeah, that's right. They do that all the time with their invitations, right?
Yeah.
And Google is doing, as you say, AR through the web. Or at least, 3D through the web, where now so many search results will result in, hey, do you want to, if you do for your book report on the mountain lion, hey, do you want to see, not only do you want to hear what a mountain lion sounds like, would you like a mountain lion on your desktop that you can then play with and turn around 360 degrees? I think it is a sign that even Apple and Google are kind of struggling to sell for the moment the public on what AR is going to do for them until they give them the whole burrito. where, hey, here's something that you would want to wear on your face for hours at a time that will not block you off from reality. It will simply enhance reality the same way that earbuds will enhance your reality by replacing all the street fights that you're hearing outside your door with great music and audiobooks. Until they find that moment, it's going to be hard to even sell like these $500 headsets that Oculus is having.
There's also this thing where Apple is philosophically right but pragmatically wrong. And what I mean by that is there was this big discussion at Apple when the iPhone was coming out, what it should run, like AppKit or WebKit or something new. And Don Melton, who ran WebKit at the time, said it shouldn't be WebKit because, like, as much as I'm the web guy, native performance is always going to be better. Web performance is always going to improve, but you'll always be able to do more with native, and you have a native platform. And that has continued over the years. Like the Palm, you know, it took 20 seconds to open the Palm calendar app back in the day, and it just wasn't acceptable to Apple at the time. And even now, web apps can do phenomenal things, but native is still faster. And Apple has two massive native platforms. So from their point of view, just running all this stuff natively, especially with a headset about to come out, makes so much sense. But so few other companies have native platforms that for them, the web is a pragmatic solution. It really is code once, run everywhere. It's the Java, it's the Air, it's the Electron app. And Apple just, they can't get over that. And the WebKit team is doing way better. They've announced all its experimental stuff. They're going to start supporting way more technologies in those streams. And I'm sure they're going to add this to the list. Well, I'm not sure, but you know, hopefully they'll add this to the list. But it is that divide between we have this hugely successful native platform. Why are you all screwing around with the web? And they're like, because we don't have your platform, sir, ma'am.
Right.
This will be something to watch at WWDC. Apparently, there is some WebXR code in WebKit. Apple apparently, you know, is a member of the, you know, W3C consortium, the immersive web group. So they, you know, they participate. But according to Yanko's article, Apple promoted this new HTML element to display 3D content in browsers. They pushed it, but it's just a narrow part of the spec. And people are saying, well, why not just implement the whole spec? Why is Apple locking it out of the iPhone? So this would be something to watch next month, what Apple says about it.
Sometimes it's security. Yeah. Like, they were slow with WebGL, but their implementation was the most secure of all the implementations, and everybody else caught up. Like, they just weren't first, but they were best, and then everyone else became just as good.
The article concludes, whether by choice or under pressure, if Apple does change its heart on supporting WebXR, industry insiders predict a massive shift for the entire industry with a new wave of innovation even before consumer-grade AR glasses are market-ready. And maybe that's why Apple's dragging its feet. Maybe it doesn't want to undermine its
own.
Yeah. It would be a new dawn for AR. You'd see a lot of investment going in this area. So watch. It's either Apple says, no, we're going to do something proprietary, bad, but, you know, that's kind of Apple's position with progressive web apps as well. They just really don't want those on the Apple platform. They don't want them in WebKit. Or they're holding on until they have something really secure, okay, and just right for maybe some hardware. But
it could even be more self-serving. Like, they might wait until they've announced, and because native is the only option, everything will look so silky smooth and fantastic. Yeah. Nobody will be able to load up a web page to show it on a web page.
Oh, sure, you can have it
as
now.
Everybody else.
Yeah, you can have it now.
And then, and then the next year they'll announce the web stuff when everyone's already gaga over how well
That was the
HomePod. The original HomePod didn't have Bluetooth, and my understanding is because they thought that a bunch of us lazy reviewers wouldn't even try AirPlay. We would just load up Bluetooth, and it would sound exactly the same as everybody else's speakers. Mm-hmm. It would not justify the price tag, and so they left it off and forced us to use AirPlay and say, "Oh, it sounds really good."
But I kind of understand that, actually. I try to use AirPlay whenever possible. It does sound better, right? Because it's got more bandwidth than Bluetooth. All right, let's take a little break. When we come back, will Apple employees come back to work? There is a bit of a revolt going on. Before we do that, though, I want to talk about earbuds. Everybody says when you get earbuds, very important if you want good bass response to get a good fit. But they give you five tips, and you're trying the tips, and you're putting them in, and then they fall out when you shake your head, and you don't know, do I have the best seal? I was so excited when Ultimate Ears, which makes the best in-ear headphones, in-ear monitors used by musicians all over the world, announced Ultimate Ear Fits, and that's what I've got in my hand right now. These are true wireless headphones that are custom fitted to your ear. But you don't have to go to an audiologist to do this. When I got my in-ear monitors, I went to an audiologist. He fills up your ear with silicone with a little string on it. You sit. You have to have popsicle sticks in your mouth to keep your mouth open while it sets. 5 minutes later, he pulls it out with a giant suction sound. And now they have a mold, which you then send to a company to make in-ear monitors with. But, you know, that's what U2's Bono does. That's what all the musicians do. They have custom fit. And I tell you, with custom fit, not only are they more comfortable, no one else can wear them. And the sound is great because they seal your ear. I thought that was impossible without an audiologist's involvement. This is an amazing technology. That you get a guaranteed fit in 60 seconds. Here, I've got the Ultimate Ears. When you first get the box, they're sealed away from oxygen. You put the UE Fits app on your phone, unseal them so that, you know, air can hit them. You're going to put them in your ear, and they use this groundbreaking light form technology to mold to the unique contours of your ear. And it does it in about a minute. Watch, I'm going to do it. So I'm going to put them in my ear. The light turns blue. It warms up. You can feel it warming up. And by the way, I, from long experience, did keep my mouth half open because apparently that changes the fit. Now, yeah, once you got them, it fits so perfectly. They sound so great and they are so comfortable. It's all I wear now. Is my UE Fits with 8 hours of continuous playback on a single charge, 20 hours with a charging case. The charging case is beautiful. This is built on industry-leading expertise after years working with pro musicians and hi-fi enthusiasts, 25 years, engineered to provide a full, warm sound with a tight, punchy low end. It's exactly how I want it to sound, but you can also use the app to set custom EQ presets. In fact, for my older ears, I actually modeled it a little bit better to fit my hearing. They let you do that, too. You can play and pause music. You can answer calls with, yes, it's got a microphone with built-in controls. Voice assistant, volume adjustment, and more. Works with iPhones. Great. Works with any phone, any Bluetooth. And by the way, if you try Fits and you don't love them as much as I do, don't worry. UE offers a 30-day money-back guarantee. Ultimate Ears. UE Fits. Plus, you'll get free shipping, free returns, and a 1-year warranty. This is the kind of comfort you can leave in all day, and it sounds so good because it seals properly. And yes, no one else can use my UE Fits. Use the promo code MacBreak at ue.com/fits to get your pair of UE Fits. Let them know you saw it here. MacBreak is the promo code, ue.com/fits. I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised by the price, too. It's really, really good. ue.com/fits. The best sounding, the best fitting, the most comfortable earbuds you've ever used. ue.com/fits. Promo code is MacBreak. Please use that. Please use that.
I should try that. The reason why I wear headphones is because I find that my earbud stamina is like 42 and a half.
Yeah, they
minutes.
Hurt after a while.
And
yeah.
So for anything that's over 2 hours, I'll be wear over the head earbud. So I'm going to check. Thank you very much. I will use that offer code.
Well, we could probably arrange for something for you, Andy. Let me ask the boss. I can get you a pair because I'd love for you to try these. Kay Woods in our chat room says he saw the ad. A couple of weeks ago, ordered them. He says, yep, got them in less than a week. Most comfortable headphones ever. So
nice.
Really good. Burke, get a pair for Andy, will you? Burke doesn't. He has none. He says, fine.
Sure. Well, yeah, right. Well, okay, yeah, yeah.
Yes, Leo.
So we talked about this last week. A lot of Apple's return to work phase-in has begun. I think in a week or two, you're going to have to, as an Apple employee, spend at least 3 days on the Apple campus or in an Apple office, up from two, up from one, up from none. Lots of people really like the work from home thing. And I think a considerable number of Apple employees have signed a petition. Somebody said as many as half, saying, you're not listening. We don't want to come back. I know Steve thought it'd be great. We could all talk to each other. Except that, by the way, at Apple, you can't, because no one's allowed to talk to anybody else about what they're working on.
So to be clear, these are the people who work with Bits. The people who've worked with Adams have been back for like a year and a half already.
The hardware folks.
Yeah.
This includes retail as well, right? But I think you couldn't really work from home in retail.
Retail opened and closed. Apple was really good at actually opening and closing and staging things out, but you had to have the retail.
So these are programmers, essentially. Coders, designers, that kind of thing.
Marketing. PR, services. Anyone who works with Bits.
Already a high-profile departure. Ian Goodfellow, who's Apple's director of machine learning, sent in a note to his staff, according to Zoe Schiffer, said, quote, "I believe strongly that more flexibility would have been the best policy for my team." Not exactly the same thing as saying I'm quitting because of it, but he's also been there exactly the right amount of time.
He followed up by saying it was high on it. It wasn't the only thing on his list, but I think it was the highest thing on his list.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Leo. Like, I wonder if he felt that he would have felt that way as a regular, like, salaried employee, that, you know, if I. Who doesn't have, like, gee, this is around the time where I could start to think about, hey, I can take all the money that all the stock money that I was being given to be wooed away from Google, and now I can take it and go someplace else.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's also I don't know if this is the situation at Apple, but I've been hearing about large companies in the Bay Area that have, like, part of the tax breaks they got when they bought property or where they built, like, in that area, was contingent upon them having a certain number of employees on that campus. And that for those few companies, that they will actually lose those tax benefits if they were to go to exactly the sort of work from home split job that employees really want. So possibly part of this could be out of Apple's hands, where it would just cost them too much money to let most of their people go from work from home.
That's interesting. There has always been the thesis, the theory as to why companies want their employees to come back to work, because they have leased and rented and bought huge amounts of office space, and damn it, we're going to fill it. You know, our offices have been mostly empty for 2 years. We invited people to come back. A lot of people felt like they really didn't want to. We weren't, you know, adamant about it. A lot of our employees can work from home. You know, obviously some people can't. Studio engineers can't. And then, you know, this new BA, well, first it was BA2. Now it's BA, what is it, 212.22 or something?
Yeah.
There's a new one.
The 20%, 25% spike, or the 33% spike, then the 25% spike, and enough of these already.
We've already had, for the first time ever, because I was really proud, we went 2 years, none of our employees got it, and now people are getting it. And
yeah, everyone's getting it.
Yeah, we're sending people home. We got to wear a mask in the studio again. So there is, you know, there's a couple of reasons you might not want to come back to work. One, for, you know, purely, you know, for health reasons. But I think we've also learned that we can get the job done, maybe even better.
Yeah.
At home. If I'm a coder, I would rather work at home on my system without
better
having employees,
arguable,
you know, peek over the partition saying, what you working on? And without
Apple
meetings.
Apple had like record years, but they also had so many people pull purchases forward because they needed new devices, they needed new things during work from home for themselves. So like, people who said that Apple was way more successful during the shutdown and lockdown and work from home, that's a huge distortion. You have to remove like everybody who suddenly needed a Mac or needed an iPad or wanted to upgrade early from that list. And I think it's inarguable that the iOS and macOS were not feature complete over the last 2 years. And a lot of that is also a distortion because people were dealing with so much. Like they were not used to working from home. They had no childcare maybe at first. They had the pressure of like six family members, all of those things. So I would throw out the negatives and throw out the positives and say, like, we really don't know what it would be like for a company like Apple. But you do have these, I did a whole video on this. I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but I put up a long video on this morning. But you have like the Apple boomers who really believe in this culture that you have to be there, that it works together, that they're going to enculturate you by dealing with everybody else on the team. And then you have like the Apple Zoomers who just think that they are relics and fossils and have no idea how like modern things should work.
Yeah.
And it's a really big culture clash. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like Apple is paying as much attention to managing it as they are managing the supply chain. They're like legit 9,000 IQ geniuses at getting products out during the pandemic. But all of this stuff keeps bubbling up over and over again. And it doesn't seem like they have a handle on it.
So one of the things we were talking about, we had Alex Kantrowitz and Brianna Wu on Sunday on Twit. Great show. And one of the things Alex thought was a little weird was Apple's famous secrecy prevents employees from talking across departments to other employees. So some of the benefits that Apple's talking about and other companies talk about of this kind of mixing of ideas isn't going to happen at Apple anyway.
Oh, no, it's engineered that way. Like in Apple Park, they have those rings, but you are locked into your like vertical slice of that ring, and it's adjacent teams that are locked together. So like you got to go out of your way to see anybody who's not already disclosed on what you're working on.
Is it
unfortunately does not solve for that problem.
Steve Jobs reportedly, when the Apple ring was going to be built, said, we only want one bathroom per floor so everybody can talk to each other. Is that apocryphal?
A big trough.
I believe so.
just like Fenway Park
you
in the sense.
You go up and down, trough, not around. Yeah. Like, no, but you don't go around at Apple Park. You go up and down. Like that's my understanding.
Oh, interesting. So you can't go around the ring. You can only...
I mean, it depends on your card, I'm guessing, but like you'll hit those invisible doors at some point.
Wow. I'd love to go in there once. Of course, I will never. But I would love to just see it. Be very cool.
I saw it in the early years.
Did you?
Yeah. When it was first opening, they took some of us in for different stuff.
And you got to go inside?
It was beautiful. It was like night and day to compare to Infinite Loop. Because Infinite Loop already had like a huge overcrowding problem by then. And this was just very early. Like I don't think the whole company certainly hadn't moved in yet. So it was very sterile and serene and fresh and clean.
Well, yes, all offices are until the humans arrive.
Until the humans arrive.
Somebody
until the Apple gangs, each of the individual Apple gangs claims their turf.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody said that there is a drone footage of Apple of people returning. Is that true? Somebody in the chat room said that.
There was so much on Twitter about people having to commute again. And I think like a lot of us who aren't in the Bay Area don't understand like how long it takes to go even just a few miles in rush hour. And that's real lost time. That's lost time. That's bad for it's bad for nature because they're burning all these fossil fuels. And it's a huge cut into their day. And a lot of them have – a lot of people in that area have like – they don't need money anymore. They're there because they want to dent universes, and they were working from beaches and ski slopes for the last 2 years.
Or they're seeing their kids and their pets a lot more often than they used to. Or they could take exactly an hour and a half off for a dental appointment instead of having to take an entire personal day off for a dental appointment.
This is the
flip of labor in 2022 that people are asking, gee, why are we doing these procedures? And the wrong answer is because we've already always done it this way. Give us a reason why I can't work from home two or three days out of the week.
Here's a one drone shot of people in the meal area. Oh, you see all the picnic tables and a line to get into the cafeteria. So by May 23rd, you'll have to spend 3 days a week waiting in line for lunch instead of...
All Tim asked Johnny for was a corner office. All he said is, we're making a new headquarters, just give me a corner
one
office.
Corner,
and then he showed up, and that's the real falling out right there.
Does Trip Meckle cover that in the book, I wonder?
No.
But Guggenheim doesn't have any corners, and it's an art museum. Are you better than the Guggenheim Art Museum?
Fast Company story, how Apple overcame its culture of secrecy to create AirPods Pro. A former HR business partner, Chris Deaver, wrote this. He joined Apple in 2015. He actually talks about the dark sides of secrecy, hoarding of critical information, pushing personal agendas, infighting. As a new HR business partner, I was often pulled into these escalations, and it was usually whinging about, the team is not sharing.
Dad!
I remember like when Apple News was announced, at the same time they announced a news aggregation feature in Safari, and they didn't work together. And everyone's like, why not do that? And it's because the two people had no idea what they were working on. They were both black operations.
Secrecy was getting in the way, Deaver writes, and what we'd seen with the development of the AirPods was an example of what exactly would happen when we hadn't solved for it. Teams were innovating for months in silos only to finally converge in the 11th hour before lunch, ending up in 5 or 6 hour long daily meetings, creating tremendous friction and burnout. People were frustrated. They wanted to leave or, quote, never work with that one person again. Customers don't know these behind-the-scenes struggles of giving birth to the AirPods, just like most engineers who developed the AirPods didn't know the AirPods would be such an explosively successful, meme-worthy product.
Or do you remember the HomePod, where like the HomePod was announced and it was delayed and it was supposed to run AirPlay, but it turned out AirPlay was like a weekend project and was never meant to scale like this.
Oh,
so you had to go and rewrite AirPlay, and then they had to realize that, oh, Core Audio has so much technical debt, we got to fix, you know, 10 years of Mac problems now as well just to get this to work.
Yeah.
And that's very sad. That's very sad to hear, because one of the hallmarks of Apple as a business has been how little infighting that they've had compared to most other companies that I know about, and compared to the Apple of old. I mean, the 1997 Apple, there were people who were actively trying to undermine each other's to get access to their resources and their human power. And it seemed as though Apple had kind of beat that. But the secrecy of not being able, not left hand, not knowing what the right hand is doing, that's why bad products happen. That's why you wind up with extremely brilliant, elegant industrial design and technological features that the operating system is not really support, has not really been built in order to take advantage of.
He says that they were inspired by Ed Catmull, his book Creativity Incorporated, and the notion of the brain trust at Pixar, a collective team committed to egos off the table, building blocks on the table. This inspiration led to a brain trust for the development of AirPods, deeper collaboration, a culture shift.
So Apple does that, but at the executive level, like they are very good at having their weekly Monday meetings and then having their feature meetings where the SVPs get together and they figure everything out. But then it's given off to the individual teams. And
they're like, kept in the dark.
I got an article about this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, why doesn't Find My work with Sirius? Well, Siri and Find My weren't disclosed on each other's process.
Yeah. That comes from, it seems that it comes from a lack of trust.
Yeah, I mean, Steve had to read people in individually, remember, in the early iPhone days? And when Steve wasn't there, they couldn't read people in, and they had to go back and forth from the whiteboard to this unsecure room to tell them what they had just drawn on the whiteboard. Yeah.
Also, people make fun of management as being, you know, Michael Scott's. But the thing is, brilliant management is all about traffic management, of being the person who is aware of these people are about to infringe into each other's lanes. They should be driving together, or they should be aware of what's going on between each other. So there's no it's one of the worst ways to step on a rake possible, and it's one of the hardest problems to solve, I think, in management.
So they apparently tried this brain trust when developing the camera for the iPhone, and then tried to apply the same approach to the next iteration of AirPods. Regular cross-staff sessions, transparency, and shared voice. What happened next was amazing. Again, this is Deaver writing. As teams converged with leaders, becoming more open, connected, and driving higher quality collaboration than ever before, we spent time coaching, collaborating, and influencing key leaders and engineers driving the next frontier of AirPods. What emerged was a brain trust with regular sessions, openness, and connection. And he says that was what brought to life the insanely great noise-canceling AirPods Pro. So this is really an article in Fast Company intended for other business leaders, saying, you know, there's possible to do this better. This is Chris Deaver writing, former HR.
That's not even necessarily dysfunction inside Apple. People, again, we are so attached to the personalities that we know about and the history and the culture, we forget that it is, as I keep saying, a $2 trillion company. And that means that they're so big that there are some things that they are not going to be very good at in terms of management, in terms of workflow, in terms of all these other things, that they have the same problems as everybody else. It's not because the company's falling apart. It's because it's a huge freaking company.
Shanghai.
It's also a really weird company because they, like, Apple, uniquely amongst the giant tech companies, almost died. Like, they were close to bankruptcy, and a lot of the executives there still think that they're beatable. Like, they know what it's like to lose. And so some of those departments have historically been so incredibly stingy that it's like one person or one engineer who's in charge of an entirely important feature for a device. Like famously, Ken Kishinda made the iPhone keyboard. At Microsoft, that would be 200 people working on the keyboard for a mobile device. And it creates, like, I think like in some companies, there's way too many cooks in the kitchen. But at Apple, there's historically been way too few. And that creates a whole different set of problematic, you know, challenges.
The company that grew up during the depression and has to use every teabag 9 times.
Shanghai's COVID lockdown in its sixth week is absolutely affecting Apple, and it is not getting any easier. This article in Wall Street Journal for a couple of days ago The COVID lockdown gets tougher. If one person tests positive, the whole building isolates. Quanta, which is where Apple makes its laptops, is one of the companies shut down. Tighter restrictions since the beginning of April. And there's a video that was shared on Twitter and YouTube of workers rushing through the barriers, trying to get out. This is from May 6th, trying to escape the lockdown. And
there's a lot of suffering going on.
It's bad news. It's really bad news. So, yeah, we could talk about the supply chain shortages and how long it's going to take you to get a Mac studio.
Well, and the policy zero spread is... It's not.
It's untenable.
Like talk about, yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's unattainable.
It's unattainable, and it's untenable, and it's
a
great human tragedy. And
it's going to cause so much pain just sticking to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fully convinced of that. Although we're still making people get vaccinated and wear their masks. There's stuff you can do without locking the sealing people into buildings.
We still have a mask mandate at least for 5 more days.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, but then again, we didn't have we weren't the epicenter of the epidemic.
Yeah.
And so the early days of the epidemic in China were pretty horrific. And I like to think that the swift response that other countries had was seeing exactly how badly it hit certain cities in China with a medical system that was unprepared for a disease that nobody knew anything about. So I can understand the depth and the intensity of the government's response, but yeah, they're not, it seems as though they've been enforcing rules that they are not, the government is not equipped to support the citizens and saying, well, yes, we will lock you down, but we will take care of you. We'll make sure that you are well supplied, you are well equipped, that your health is well taken care of, that we are not going to do more damage than we absolutely have to. But when you're really tearing families apart and saying, here's a bag of groceries that may or may not work for you, good luck. If you need medical care, good luck. It's not good.
Graham Tate is an Australian-based photographer traveling in the Flinders Ranges with $7,000 worth of gear. It was stolen from his car in the parking lot of his hotel. Fortunately, he had AirTags attached to the items. He opened the Find My app, found the location of his stolen gear. Now, I'm going to insist that he did not go then to that location, and you shouldn't either. He called the police and was fortunate that, in this case, the police responded instead of saying, yeah, right, and was able to recover everything, including his wallet, his laptop, his camera, and GoPro. The items were found in a room in the same hotel.
It's nice to click on that story with that headline and not have a. I'm sort of tensing myself for paragraph 9 to say he actually didn't own the AirPod. The AirPod was slipped into the bag by another thief who intended to rob him later on.
All right. Anything else that we should talk about?
There was this weird story from Linus Tech Tips. I don't know if you saw it, but he got swindled out of $90,000 because somebody hacked his contractor while he was busy redoing his house. And they jumped onto an existing thread saying that if you give us a bank draft for $90,000, we'll cut this much money off of the price. And because it was part of the ongoing conversation, they thought it was legitimate, sent the check off. A couple days later, their contractor said they were hacked. He's like, well, why didn't you tell me that earlier? And then spent like a few days trying to get the RCMP, which is like the Canadian FBI, to help. And they were not helpful. But a listener, a viewer, managed to get the bank in Toronto involved. And then the Toronto RCMP seemed to get involved. But it's just like the amount of the quality of social engineering attacks is getting so high now that like there's...
Believe nothing.
You got to be so careful.
Send no money.
Always use a second channel to authenticate the first channel of the...
Oh, my God. I'm terrifying.
I'm paying my bills by traveler's checks from now on. It's just getting so bad.
Can you still get traveler's checks?
That would be a good challenge. That should be for the next. I don't know if Linus Tech Tips is doing their they used
pay
to do these challenges where
with traveler's checks.
Exactly. Build a thousand. You have a budget of $1,000. You have to pay with traveler's checks.
There are younger people listening, Andy, who do not know what traveler's checks are. I believe
they don't even know who Karl Malden is.
No, nope.
My God,
don't leave home without it.
Not even through his movie work.
No. In the old days, kids, before ATMs, if you went to a foreign land, you would buy something called traveler's checks, often from American Express. You would sign the front, but not the back. Then when you arrived in a foreign land, you would go to an American Express office, and you would sign the back in front of the teller, and they would give you the dollar value of the traveler's checks in the local currency. Lo and behold, you also used to be able to get mail at the American Express offices.
Yeah.
That's how old I am.
I'm so lucky. I'm just young enough that like the first time, like when I was 20 years old, I traveled on business. Like I had to look for an ATM that supported my network back in Boston, but I was able to simply like take out money from there. And my dad, who traveled a lot because he was an engineer for like electrical power companies for part of his career, it's like all the infrastructure he had taught me about, like
since I was seven years old.
Was like, all I got to do is like this
ATMs
piece of plastic
changed everything. Unbelievable. Of course, you have to pay a huge exchange rate.
$9 in transaction fees as well.
But you have to pay for transaction for traveler's checks. They still offer them, by the way. CHEQUES. For more than a century, our traveler's checks have helped travelers protect their money.
Who did Nellie Bly rely on? She went around the world in 80 days. Why? It was Lloyd's Bank and American Express.
Wow.
One thing we didn't mention, and it's not worth the whole thing, but there's a lovely scene. Apple put up a May the 4th be with you video with Skywalker Audio, and they have a lovely scene of their server room just replete with Mac Pros.
Oh, yes. This was actually pretty cool. Let me find that.
I mean, there's nothing that R2-D2 can't make adorable, even when it's just his sound.
Yeah, it's... you think I could play it?
I mean, it's on YouTube.
I feel like it's on YouTube. I should be able to play it, right? Yeah. Let me just play it without going full screen.
If you were to close your eyes and just listen to the sounds, could you identify the movie and where we are in the movie? Everything is just so...
I think so.
Iconic.
This is the one you're talking about, right?
Yeah, as long as we critique it, it's fair use, Leo.
Yeah, we're critiquing it.
You're like, oh, that's Star Wars. Yeah. That's totally Star Wars.
So what's he using?
Is he using a...
That is a stormtrooper.
I guess they couldn't afford a color or camera. Stuff.
They're not Apple displays, so I think that's why they keep the logos really blurry.
Oh, like they're not Apple displays. Oh.
No.
There's a MacBook.
But there are MacBooks and there are Mac Pros around.
And are they using Logic or...
The Cougar. No, Pro Tools. Actually say the name Pro Tools in the...
It says Pro Tools, which means you can't use Mac OS Monterey. You can't even use Catalina.
I love how much fun they're having.
Nice. May the 4th. Oh, there's a film. Wait a minute. This is
that's the trailer. So the next trailer came out.
Oh, man.
There are some color parts, but again, I think they're going out of their way to not show the not Apple stuff.
It's hysterical. Yeah. Well, good. I just played the tease. You can't fault me for that.
Exactly. You're helping drive traffic. You're being a good
citizen. The way it works is that like it's all robots. Like if they sense it, the content ID system will flag it, and then you just got to say,
I
dispute this. And they will never, unless you're egregiously violating it, they can't really do anything.
Well, they can demonetize. There's all sorts of stuff they can do, and then you have to fight it.
It's just like you just say no, it's wrong, and then like usually within a couple of days or like it's the same day, a lot of times it's cleaned up.
Not been our experience. We'll say no, it's wrong, and then they'll say come get us, big boy. It's not a good system.
No.
All right. I guess we could talk about the fact that Apple better and Google and everyone else better mind their P's and Q's because. The UK antitrust body will be able to fine Apple and Google 5% of their global revenue every day.
Yeah.
That means in 3 weeks, you make no money.
Revenue?
Jeez. Jeez.
I find it odd that you can fine based on global revenue. That seems like an overreach
Well, that's the sword of Damocles that they need to have like the poison pill to make sure that people, companies like Apple and Facebook and Google aren't just going to simply wait stuff out.
Well, like all these countries are going to say, we want money. We're going to just take it.
They want a solution so that they actually get what they want, and what they want isn't money. They want people to operate by the rules that the EU and the individual local governments have actually created. They know that once they start asking for like $200 billion from a company, they know that at that point that's when you are no longer prime minister, and the new prime minister is being well backed, and they used to run the iPod division, you know. But this just comes to show you that why you should, if you're interested in the subject, you need to absolutely follow what the EU is deciding, because the EU's antitrust and privacy legislation is very much being written as a template for all governments everywhere, and so every government is looking at it. So if the United States government ever seriously got its act together about antitrust and was able to really develop broad across the aisle support for this sort of thing, it would be something very, very similar to what the EU passed and is going to be enacted in 2023.
Not that I don't realize it's complicated and nuanced, and there's a lot of stuff that needs to be worked out, but John Gruber had a fabulous, noted design and security experts at the EU decide to remake Apple Pay article that I thought was typically snarky in the Gruber fashion. But I'm always wary, because the EU, I find, has really, really good concepts and really terrible implementations. And I've never seen one of their antitrust things work out the way that I, as a consumer, and I keep mentioning this, but like, they effectively destroyed web rendering engines. I only have Chromium and WebKit now, effectively. I just wish that their policies were, what's the right word? We're more in the spirit of competitiveness and not in sort of the myopia that they always get dragged down into.
Well, it's interesting. There was a finding. This isn't part of the 2023 Act, but there was a finding that they sort of attached to it after it was passed, saying that, oh, by the way, the fact that the only web rendering engine that is being allowed on iOS is Apple's web rendering engine, similar for Google, that's not going to fly either. You're going to have to allow competing web rendering engines on your platforms. I think there's going to be a lot of pain associated with these laws. The question is it going to achieve much, much more than the pain that's going to be suffered? That's always the question. I'm kind of okay if it's no longer as easy to do certain things, so long as it's solving really, really major problems, so long as I don't have to worry about, so long as I have more options, so long as I have more opportunities, I'm perfectly okay. I think that'll be okay for everybody.
The old joke was that the Justice Department really only cared about lowest pricing. They didn't care about any sort of real competitiveness. If you could get a lower price, like if Amazon was willing to undercut people, that was fine as long as it was lower price. And the EU cared about competitiveness, but in an abstract where it was like a forced competitiveness that wasn't always in the best interest of the consumer. And I have this romantic notion of them looking at a market, getting the best people involved in it, like the brightest people who understand that market deeply, and figure out laws that make it better for me as a customer. Because sometimes the lowest price isn't what I need or want, and sometimes just having a bunch of companies do it isn't what I need or want. There's a lot of different solutions across this, and I just like, there's such a big and powerful thing. I wish they took the process more seriously.
That is actually what Commissioner Khan's what a lot of her dogma is about. That there part of her thesis isn't just that, hey, tech premiums are too big, they need to be knocked down a peg, but part of it is that we need to stop considering making how much are people paying for a pair of set of snow tires the only criteria for whether a monopoly exists. They need to ask what is the consumer experience like? What is consumer options like? Is it giving them more power, or is it being used to restrict their power? Which I think is a very 2022 attitude.
Internet Explorer.
Finally, if there's a will, there's a way. Now you could play Fortnite on any device. Speaking of which, Xbox Cloud Gaming, no subscription required. You can play with touch or play with a controller. You can use Safari, right? It won't work on my browser, Firefox.
Tim Epic was so happy.
Yeah, Fortnite is everywhere. You cannot escape it.
You can get your V-Bucks right on the web.
Right there. All right, let's take a little time out and get your picks ready, if you would, boys and girls. But first, a word from our sponsor. And actually, I know John's been playing with it because he's been doing some wild transitions with our new TriCaster 2 Elite. That is the latest TriCaster that we are using, the most complete live production system on the planet. And John has been playing with all those new features, too, every once in a while, strange things will happen. Newtek is an amazing company. Back when I started Twitter in 2005, I was looking for actually, it was when I started doing video, so maybe a couple of years later. We were looking for a way to switch video live, a way I could do it at the same time as I was doing a show. And it was a no-brainer. That's when we started using TriCaster. We have not stopped in more than 15 years. There you go. The TriCaster 2 Elite is our current model. Pretty impressive. For instance, we've got that point tilt, pan tilt zoom camera over my head, which is connected with one wire, power over Ethernet. And NDI means that camera can feed our TriCaster over the network digital interface and get its power all from one cable. That's remarkable. It's an all-encompassing digital media solution to create content for the internet, mobile, television distribution. Late last year, they released the updated version of the TriCaster 2 Elite. That's when we got the new one. Lots of new features. The much-loved Live Call Connect feature now supports Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, and FaceTime as inputs to any production. In addition, selectable audio and video returns now enables the TriCaster 2 Elite operators to view an audio return like any other output, allowing greater flexibility. They've got this new neural voice isolation tool to clean your audio. Using AI, the system can cancel or reduce background noise and automatically detect voices, maintaining all important production quality. Really widely used in churches and sporting events, television stations, the TriCaster 2 Elite is an entire production facility in a box. Increased power, increased flexibility, but simplicity. So have driven some of the exciting new capabilities with variable support. In macros, the system offers a dynamic and powerful tool that allows operators to nest macros, deliver complex productions more easily. Little pro tip, little secret. That's how I run my TriCaster in my other studio. It's all macros, baby. It'll all work. TriCaster 2 Elite now supports encoding of 3 channels, anything from HD to UHD, all at the same time, which is fantastic. Greater power and flexibility to productions. They've brought the live panel builder into the TriCaster, meaning users can create bespoke user interfaces and customize each preset within the user interface, making your distributed workflow simpler, more cohesive, and never, never compromising on quality. Quality and creativity have not been forgotten as operators now see the resolution and frame rate of every video source coming into their TriCaster to ensure they can always be confident of the quality of their sources. The NDI Genlock tool allows TriCaster 2 Elite users to match outputs to a common sync pulse. Alex Lindsay will tell you how important that is, so you know exactly when to send a frame of video for pinpoint accuracy. It's perfect for remote workflows. You can now send alpha channel through one of the mix outs, bringing post-production closer to live. Users can use the keying on TriCaster to feed graphics or real-time 3D creation tools. Since its arrival in 2020, the TriCaster 2 Elite has offered an incredibly powerful live production system. The very latest updates, which we have now, I'm so happy to say, put even more power in the hands of storytellers everywhere. TriCaster 2 Elite. It's transformative. It's setting new standards. And you know what? It's better than broadcast. It is. It really is. The TriCaster 1 Pro is an evolution in modern storytelling for producers, content creators, and publishers with future-ready capabilities. Why don't we have one of those, John? Let's get one of those. It's a streamlined live video production system with Live Call Connect, support for 4K, UHD switching, live streaming, recording, and data-driven. We can have 4K, but just not for my picture, okay? Explore the latest in the TriCaster family. Visit go.newtek.com/twit-tv, where you'll find an easy-to-use interactive guide that offers advice on which TriCaster is right for you. That's go.newtek.com/twit-tv. Don't forget the dash. I just love the Newtek stuff. And now I want a TriCaster 1 Pro. Did they give us the option? Did they say you can have the TriCaster 2 Elite? Ah, this is brand new, this new one. This just came out. All right. Okay. Get it. Let's get on the horn. I always want the latest. Visit go.newtek.com/twit-tv. Now, time for the picks of the week. Andy Inoko can start us off. Andrew?
This is a really esoteric but interesting app I came across recently. It's called Blur Screen, and all it does is it will blur sections of your screen on command, so that if you're doing like a live stream and you're doing if you're even recording a video, recording a screen capture of, hey, and here's what it's like, here's how to log into the system, and this is the point which you don't want people to see your username or your password. Instead of like recording it to video and then using post-production, you can just simply activate this plugin, draw a rectangle on the screen and select how blurry it's going to be, and then like that section of the screen is just blurred out. It's also nice because you can activate it by hotkey. So again, if you're pre-recording, you know that this is the area of the screen that I will want to have blurred out when I demonstrate this part of it. So you can just blah 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 blah, click this, do this, and then hit Command B, and now suddenly that part is blurred out while you're typing in your thing, and then you go to the next part and you can unblur it. It seems to do a very, very simple thing, such a simple thing that I was surprised that I was like, there must be something else like this out there somewhere, and there kind of really isn't. There are a lot of individual apps for graphic designers that will make it very, very easy to, I'm going to drag this image onto this app and then I can black out parts of a user ID or whatever like this. This is the only one that I can come across that seems to be for live streamers. It'll work with Zoom. It'll work with most screen sharing sort of apps, or for screen capture, for capturing what you're doing on your screen while you're doing it. And it's not that expensive. It's $20, but you own it. It's not like $20 like a year for that. And it strikes me as something that, if you don't need it, you will never use it. But there are people listening to, give the URL. This is exactly the solution. If most of your post-processing is like, now that I've gotten the video editor, now I have to edit out all this stuff that I don't want people to see. It's nice to be able to do this stuff live or in camera, so to speak, without having to deal with it later. So I thought that seems to work pretty well.
Now I can go 4K and just blur my face. Perfect solution.
There you go. If I didn't shave this morning, there you go. Just blur from like here down.
Blurscreen.app. BlurScreen.app. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So this just came out today, and I always like to keep these picks super fresh if I can, and it is the DJI Mini 3 Pro. Ooh. I have the Mini 2, and the reason that the Minis are so important is that a lot of jurisdictions have clamped down on drones, you know, as well they should have, and for over, I think it's 250 grams, you need to basically register it with your local flight authority. I think in some places you've got to take the equivalent of a pilot's license, but they're highly, highly regulated with tons of areas that you just, like, people will tattle on you super fast. So this is like a 249 or so. It's like 1 gram, 1 ounce. I forget the measurement. What, just right below the legal limit. So you can actually use this in a lot of areas. And
this is a caveat. I think, like, this is what Mike Elgin had when we were in Mexico. And it was great because you could just whip it out anywhere and get great footage because it's so light. It's so little.
There's no fly zone still. Like, for example, the app won't let you use it near an airport. So there are places where it's heavily restricted. And some places are completely restricted just because of the government. But it lets you use it any place where it's not dangerous to use. And the big difference between this and the 2 is, one, this has higher capacity batteries if you really need to use it longer. They are heavier, though, so you will then have to go through the whole normal drone process if you want to use those. But you can get like 30 minutes with just the built-in batteries here.
This is iJustine's a video using the Mini 3 Pro.
You need to find something. You need to find somebody in your life who looks at you the way Justine looks at the controller that she discovers. Like, she didn't think there was an included controller. She sees there's a controller with a screen. She lights up in a way that you've just got to find somebody.
Actually,
in your
that's
life
cool because in the past you've used an iPhone or an iPad, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God! There's a controller. Oh!
And a touchscreen.
Oh!
Yeah,
the great thing about iJustine is that her reputation is such that you know that's a genuine like reaction.
Yeah, she's not faking it.
Now get ready to shoot the thumbnail, producer, because I'm going to be really big when I go, oh my God!
I like it though that the controller has its own thing built in. That's nice.
So no one tries to FaceTime you or call you or message you while you're using it.
Yeah.
And also, this has four sensors, two on the top and two on the bottom for dodging.
Good, because I need that.
Like the Mavic, the Mini 2 didn't. So like if you were flying at some place you shouldn't be flying to.
It's really easy.
I know this from personal experience. It would bounce off.
Yeah.
And that's not good for a drone. So this actually will avoid obstacles for you, which makes it much more useful. And the camera pivots so that if you are doing, like, for example, if your son is doing the TikTok and he wants to zoom in on his cooking, You, you don't have to crop anymore. You can just rotate the camera to portrait mode, film all your videos that way. So he flies into the window, right into the kitchen, sits down on the table just in time for the flambe, whatever you need, which is great because there are shorts and reels and TikToks and all those things right now.
I may have to get this. Do you think I won't be able to crash it?
No, you'll crash it for sure. But there's a bonus pack you can get that has the extra batteries and extra propellers. So, hopefully it'll resist at least a couple times.
I'm thinking I'd like to bring this with me to Alaska. It might be kind of fun.
Peter McKinnon had some footage. He filmed on a lake in Italy, and it is unbelievably good looking. It's a 48-megapixel sensor on the camera, so it shoots really, really crisp, beautiful looking video.
Well, that's the big sacrifice in a lot of these little ones is you don't have a good camera. Yes. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And you can do, though, it's not like first person, like some drones are first person and you actually feel like you're flying it. But if you're a good enough video game player, you can do those shots where like you fly through the open door in the
right.
car, you know, so you can do some really impressive
FPV
stuff.
Is very hard to do.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's kind of cool like if you get really good at it, but it's very, very, you got to really practice a lot.
And this stuff is just gorgeous looking.
Does this have the follow me thing? Because that's the other thing. Yeah, it looks like it does active
track. It has
tracking,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can get on the cruise and just say, follow us?
As long as it's cruise legal. I'm not making any...
I don't know if it's cruise legal.
Hashtag not a lawyer.
If it's cruise legal. Okay.
But a lot of beaches are fine with it. You know, a lot of places, a lot of parks are fine with it. And like a lot of car... Like there's fantastic car shots that you can get. It's really nice.
Wow. I love it that it has obstacle sensing and all plans now.
Okay. This might be finally the one that says, you know what? Maybe this wouldn't be a foolish purchase, Andy.
It's always a foolish purchase for me. Yeah. Right now, you have to reserve it. You can't buy it yet. So I'll just have to fill in my address. And I think
if you want it, like act fast, because what we've noticed about the last couple of years is that you can buy things right away or have a really long wait when you start to buy them later.
Like they made 100 and they're not going to make any more until 2025.
Well, I don't know if you saw it, but like the MacBook was like, I don't know, 70 odd days or something to get like a MacBook Pro and some of the other
crazy.
Stuff.
Crazy. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. It won't be available till August, so I can't take it on the cruise. Whew, that's a relief.
No. You can get a Mac. You can get a DJI Mini too. I mean, you just have to...
No. I did order the Snapchat selfie drone. I figured I can't screw that up. But there's nothing to steer with. If it's going to screw up, it's just going to have to screw itself up.
I figure Lindsay must have an ornithopter for his iPhone. He just
wouldn't that be cool with the flapping wings?
Yeah. A heli-gyro.
Folks, we have come to the conclusion of this gripping, thrilling edition of Mac Break Weekly, the day the iPod died.
Bye, Miss American Eye.
Thousand songs in my pocket. Andy Inako, WGBH is calling. When will you respond?
I am off this week, but I'll be back next week. Until then, you can see everything that I've been doing for the last few years on WGBHnews.org. You can stream it wherever you want. They usually break out my own segments into their own actual link.
I have a plug. You can watch my son, Salt Hank, in the sandwich battle tonight on Access Hollywood. I know who wins, but I can't tell you.
Yay.
This is his second appearance on Access Hollywood. I think he's becoming a celebrity.
Soon you'll be the father. You won't be like the star.
I already am. I know.
His dad.
Yeah, I'm the father. Yeah.
You're Hank's dad.
I'm Hank's dad.
What's he going to wear to the Met Gala next year?
You know, that's a good question. I'll have to ask him. I bet he's going.
Matt Black chef's hat.
I bet he's going. Renee Ritchie, youtube.com/Renee Ritchie. You said you just did a video about this whole back to work thing.
I'm looking at Apple's culture clash from retention through like whether people are happy with Apple Park, people who have enough money they don't have to work anymore if they don't want to, people want to spend time with their RSUs if they can, and then just what's going to happen moving forward. So everything that's currently a battle, I think, within Apple for their future.
Doomed, finally, is the name of the is the name of the piece. You're going to have to watch it. You got to have to watch it to find out what he's talking about.
Like I said, I'm trying to do videos that you won't see on any other YouTube channel.
I'm
experimenting with not doing like B-roll. I'm trying to do the stuff that I can do.
Good.
It's very rewarding so far.
Good.
That's so great. Your point of view is what I love about your videos.
Exactly.
And so we don't need to be, we don't need the 13th hot take on something that really there's really nothing to say about it except for to inform people it's happened. It's like you have such a great point of view, and every time you have something to say about a topic, it always makes me not necessarily reconsider what I thought. Said, ooh, that is something I hadn't seen it from that direction before. I'm going to reconsider a few things.
Absolutely right.
Well, I get to hone them all here with you guys on Mac Break, so you are my
exactly. I'm so lucky that like I'm on NPR on Fridays, because oftentimes like, I'll have written like that part of the segment like on like Monday night when the news hit, then like suddenly I have to actually talk about it with three very very smart people. It's like, oh, that is an excellent point. I guess I hadn't thought about that before. And suddenly on Friday, I'm a genius.
Why do you think I started Twit all those years ago? It was to combine all the knowledge of all the friends I have so that I could not be such an idiot. And it hasn't worked yet.
I think the goal of like Mac Break is like, if you listen to us in the morning, you will be the smartest person in the room and at lunchtime.
That's
our only goal.
That's our goal. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live at live.twit.tv. There's actually live audio and video there. Watching live, chat live with us, either in our Club Twit Discord or on our wide open IRC at irc.twit.tv. Folks, if you've subscribed to Club Twit, $7 a month, you get ad-free shows. I get ad-free shows. You get ad-free shows. Plus, you get the Twit Plus feed, which has some wonderful stuff in it, including the Untitled Linux Show. And you get access to our Discord, which is gobs of fun all the time. So it's really a win all around. $7 a month, twit.tv/clubtwit. Please help us out. Help a guy out. Help a fellow out. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show available. It is a Open the Pod Bay Doors Hal cast. You can get it from our website, twit.tv/mbw. You can also get it wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. There's a full YouTube channel dedicated to it as well. Audio and video of all the shows. Thank you so much for watching. And now I have to say it. It's time to get back to work because break time is over. See you next time.
The world is changing rapidly. So rapidly, in fact, that it's hard to keep up. That's why Micah Sargent and I, Jason Howell, talk with the people making and breaking the tech news on Tech News Weekly every Thursday. They know these stories better than anyone, so why not get them to talk about it in their own words? Subscribe to Tech News Weekly, and you won't miss a beat every Thursday at twit.tv.